welcome to Pivot Points. This is the podcast about the pivotal moments that have shaped our academic, professional, and personal lives. I'm Femke, your head of communications at Wolfson College, and I'm all about creating ways for you to share your stories, like this podcast. DPhil candidate Estelle Paulus has been on a journey in academia, from biomedical chemistry to physics, all the way to geography and sustainable food systems. She's driven to make an impact in the world, and she's starting right here at Wolfson with her involvement in college governance. You and I know each other a little bit through generally life at Wolfson, right?
Yeah, that's what I would say.
We just kind of bumped into each other in a few different spaces.
That's actually true. I think we first met each other at the alumni thing.
Alumni, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So, mm-hmm.
And then also through the Green Team.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
And to like college governance in general and food survey stuff.
Yeah, basically. Food surveys. So can you tell us a little bit about what you're doing here at Wolfson?
So I'm a student at Wolfson. Mm-hmm. I'm doing a DPhil in environmental science. I started by doing a master and I was a Wolfson student by then as well. And then I was 1 year of an associate member. So yeah, I would say generally I'm a student at Wolfson and now I've taken up some of the like more governance related roles, just trying to help out.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm part of the subcommittee for the food and for catering, and I'm also a vice chair of general meeting.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm representing the student body in the governance of the college.
Yeah. And you're studying food systems.
I am studying food systems, exactly. So I'm looking...
Talk us through that in layman's terms.
I will try my best. I mean, the good thing is I just started, right? So I don't know anything but layman's terms. No, so what I'm trying to understand is how to build resilience within the food system. So the way our food system currently works, it's arguably not sustainable in a sense that we're like degrading the soil in many parts of the earth. We are having big issues with biodiversity loss and also increasing climate change through unsustainable agricultural practices and stuff. So the question is like, how can you get the food system into a more sustainable state and then also maintain it there? That's what resilience basically means, like trying to like let it stay in a state where like we are having enough food for the world population, that's the goal, but then at the same time we don't degrade the environment, we have good economic outcomes as well, so people who earn their living in food system are not like affected by poverty and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And as well that you have like social and cultural values which are attached to food, that they're thriving. Mm-hmm. That's the idea.
And hence your involvement as catering rep here at the college.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, that was more an accident, to be honest. I knew Freddie, who's the former chair of general meeting, and he was at some point asking me about, like, hey, we've got this position within the college. We need a catering rep. Would you be interested in doing that? And I was like, yes, why not? As life happens. Mm. And so that's how I ended up there. But it's useful to have a background in food.
Yeah.
Because you're just, I feel like, more involved in the topic already, so
yeah, somehow like a little bit of a practical application.
Yeah, and it's also kind of, I feel like it profits my research as well, right? Because I actually see what might be the real life problems if you like make a smart plan how you can, I don't know, make the food system better, and then at some point you realize this is actually not at all applicable in right in real life. It
works very different in the real world.
But, exactly. So yeah. It's good to have this like groundwork as well.
Yeah, I think so. So can you talk me through your academic journey a little bit? So you said you studied 3 terms of biomedical chemistry and then you switched to physics.
Right.
And now you're studying food systems. So talk me through that journey and how we got to where we are today.
It is a very long story. And
we have time.
I mean, the thing is, like, it is not even that exciting. But so it started all basically after school, like I guess every academic journey starts at some
point. And you're German.
I'm German. Yeah, exactly. So I finished school not knowing what to do, like basically having no idea what to do. My problem was I kind of liked all subjects in school. So I was always like, I can't really choose and I don't want to limit myself. And what I knew from the start is that I wanted to do something which has a meaning to me. So somewhere I felt like helping society, helping humanity in like a broad sense.
Mm.
But how, I didn't know. So I was thinking about maybe I should be a teacher or I should do medical science, which was one of the ideas. And so I think I focused on medical science because it's a way to like combine a lot of different research fields. So you need physics in a bit, you need biology, you need medicine, you need chemistry. So that was kind of a way to combine as many sciences as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And there was this one course in my hometown university in Mainz where they had biomedical chemistry, which is basically everything at once.
Right.
So I started doing that. And there were two things that I quite soon realized, but it took me a time to actually make a decision on that. So the first thing that I realized is that I started a course in chemistry. It says biomedical chemistry, but the thing, like the big word in it is chemistry.
Mm.
And that's what you're studying. And
did you realize that before you started? Or
I did somehow, but I didn't know to what extent it would be chemistry and not biomedical chemistry in a sense that I had, I think in my whole three terms, I had three courses on biology and medicine and the rest was all chemistry courses. So the second thing that I realized during that time was I'm not really a person who's suitable, or I don't feel really well placed in a laboratory.
Why not?
I don't know. I prefer theoretical work in some way, at least if it comes to laboratorial work. So I love interacting with people, but I'm not really a person who's like, so for example, standing in front of like things which are very dangerous, like there are some chemicals which can easily kill you within seconds, or even worse, they kind of introduce like cancerous processes in your body and you might get cancer like 10 years later without even realizing that you're like poisoning yourself right now. So I was like really anxious about that. So that was something that is not, it's just not for me. So I was studying it and after some time I was like, okay, this is really not my course of study. I should do something else.
So based on the environment, you kind of felt like it wasn't your place.
Yeah, like based on the, so I couldn't picture myself doing something related to chemistry later on. And I couldn't picture myself continue doing chemistry for another extended time period, which would happen. I mean, maybe after my master's, I would do, I don't know, work in a different field or do a DPhil related to a more medical topic so I don't have to be in a laboratory. But even then, I was wondering, would I be happy if I would spend my life in a laboratory in some way? And I answered that question with no. And then something else happened. I had, in my third term, I had a course which was physical chemistry. And what we did was quantum mechanics. And I was fascinated. I was like really fascinated by the whole topic. I like that was the first course where I was really sitting there and really enjoying myself. And I was like, after just three terms, I was like, okay, I know I don't really like laboratory work. And the course that I enjoyed most for the whole like time of my studies were math, physics, and physical chemistry. And I was like, okay, maybe
there's a theme here.
Maybe there's a theme. Maybe it's just say no to every laboratory work for now and just go to physics. So that made me switch to physics. But my problem was that kind of conflicted with my other theme, which was like, I want to do something meaningful and useful. And my problem with physics always was during my whole studies that I really loved it. Like, it's beautiful. I feel like it's a, like, the math behind it is beautiful. The logic is beautiful. I like the way you can, like, derive things. That was, for me, always the thing that I like most, that I don't actually have to remember that much. I can derive things as I go and things suddenly make sense. And it's also fun to see where you actually don't know how our current knowledge is actually fitting into the picture. And they're concurring I'm missing the word here. Sorry, that's okay. For my English.
I would jump in, but maths is not my area.
No. I'm talking about there's a competition between different knowledge theories. Okay. Mm-hmm. So that's also interesting to see. But it's not really directly useful in a sense that you could say, okay, it's, I don't know, contributing to like human health in general in some way. So when I switched to physics, I was for some time thinking, okay, I might just stop on that like idea of doing medical research on the long run. But I didn't want to let it go completely in the beginning. So what I did, I started physics and medicine at the same time. So in Germany...
Is this in your undergrad?
Yes.
So you went through quite a journey on your undergrad.
Yeah, I did. So the thing was, like, medicine is, like, it's not like in the US where you have to go to medical school after you study, but you can study medicine from the go. And that's what I did. So I started medicine and physics at the same time. Mm. And then I said, okay, I'll give myself one term. And after this one term, I will decide whether I do medicine or physics. Mm-hmm. And, like, I think after 3 weeks, it was clear to me, I will do physics, not medicine. Mm-hmm. Like, that was not a decision to make, actually. Yeah. So I did physics. I did a lot of physics. I loved it. I went into particle physics because I did work in a research group in my university. So this was still in Mainz. Mm-hmm. Where I was working for some project which is related to CERN. Mm-hmm. So I even went to CERN for 3 months, which was really, really nice. And during that time period, I already kind of knew... still knowing that I don't know like lab work that much, that I would rather go into theoretical physics because I really like this like theoretical beauty. So that's what I did, and I thought, okay, maybe I can apply for an only theoretical master. And there was this one master course in Oxford, which is called Mathematica and Theoretical Physics. I thought, perfect. Sounds for me. So that's why I applied.
So you came to Oxford for your master's.
Exactly. Yeah. And I was lucky enough to get in. So yeah, but by the time that I wanted to start my master's, I was still kind of confused about what should I do on the long run. Because I liked the work, but I was still not seeing myself as a like researcher in physics. Not because I don't like it, but because I was like, is my liking it enough to keep me fueled for the rest of my career?
So at that point, you didn't see yourself as a pure academic and researcher?
Yeah, I just didn't know how to apply it in a way that is really meaningful to me.
Mm.
Like, I mean, it's fun doing it, but I think I didn't even think about going into anything but academia, because I think it's sometimes quite hard to work as a physicist, especially a theoretical physicist, if you don't stay in academia. So I couldn't picture myself.
What are those jobs outside?
Exactly. So most theoretical physicists I know who did not end up going to academia are doing something completely different, like consulting or like working in some company doing some, I don't know, math related stuff, engineering, something like that. So it's really hard to like picture your journey ahead. And by that time I got quite involved into climate activism. It kind of developed on the side all the time. But when I came back from CERN, I had one professor which I was working with in this like research group in my hometown university, what I was talking about. And he was part of the Scientist for Future team in my university. And I asked him whether I could get involved. And during this like whole time of the application and stuff, I was more and more involved into this like climate community. So we were thinking about starting something where we can advise local policymakers for like how to build cities more sustainably. Mm. We started like a poster, a poster, how would you call that?
Did you find that practical experience at that level? Did that give you a different sense of confidence then when you started trying to shift your academic work in that direction as well?
It did. Yeah. So I think it was actually the reason why I shifted it was because I realized, like, this is a problem that I really see that we have to start working on. And it's really urgent and it's really real world. And I was like, I want to contribute in solving this issue. Also because I think the more I got involved in it, the more I realized how bad the situation is.
Mm.
And I think I'm always saying this as a joke, but I think there's some truth in that. It's kind of a therapy.
Mm.
So I could either read the IPCC and cry, or I can read the IPCC and decide to start acting on those things.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I think that was the reason why I then said, okay, I want to do something into this, like, direction in general, but I had no idea how.
Yeah.
And I think what happened was, it was actually quite funny. I was on a cycling tour and I was cycling. I think I was just cycling into the city, but I was having my headphones in. Bad habit, never do it. But I was listening to a podcast. And in this podcast, they mentioned Federico Otto, which is a professor who was a professor at Oxford, now is a professor at Imperial. And she's started something which is called the World Weather Attribution Project. And what they're trying to do is to understand how much humans or human action has influenced certain extreme weather events. So, like, the probability of a certain event occurring in a climate which would have not been influenced by humans and a climate with human-induced greenhouse gas emissions and how that would change the probabilities.
Mm.
And she's a theoretical physicist.
Mm.
And I was like, this is fascinating. First of all, her research is fascinating, but also the fact that she was a theoretical physicist kind of got me into, like, hey, there's, like, that's a world someone out there where you can be a physicist.
Yeah.
Maybe not so much doing physics anymore, but still doing something math and physics related. Mm. And you could actually, like, work on that and, like, apply your skills in a way that are actually useful, directly useful.
So you found a bit of a role model in her.
Exactly. Mm. So I figured out that she was in Oxford. I literally just heard her name and what she was doing. And then I started my own research, like, what is she actually doing? Stalking, like, her. Where is she? Exactly. And I figured out she's in Oxford. And I was like, hey, I'm going for, like, a course in Oxford. I will do something completely different.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's the same university. Mm. There has to be a chance of, like, writing her an email. So I wrote her an email. Does she know that you're here? Yes, she knows. Great. Mission accomplished. So I wrote her an email being like, hey, I really love your really love your research. It's so interesting. By the way, I'm starting a course. It's, like, in physics and math. It's not really related to any environmental stuff. But do you know if there are courses which I can take, which are more environmental related? And do you think I could write
this is how you get in with your heroes. For anyone listening, this is how you do it. You're going to send an email.
Yeah, send an email.
And hope for a response.
And hope for a response. And I got a response. I still remember that day when I was, like, getting the response. I was sitting there like, she actually wrote an email back. Mm. I didn't see that coming at all. But, so yeah, I asked her whether I could do a master thesis with her.
Mm.
Which didn't work out in the end because the maths department was not happy in trying to do a thesis in a, like, math and physics course, which is not math and physics.
Interdepartmental politics.
Yeah, it did not work. Fine. But, yeah.
But you did get an email response.
Yeah, I did get an email response. And, yeah, that kind of got me into switching into, like, environmental science and stuff. So I stayed in the department, so her department. So she was in the ESI by then, which is the Environmental Change Institute. And I started working in the Environmental Change Institute for a year after I finished my master's degrees, also working on food, actually.
So you did your master's here, then you had a year of working at the institute.
Exactly. And then I started my DPhil, and now I'm in the first year. So that's how my journey went.
Hmm.
But that's how I ended up in environmental science more broadly.
Yeah.
And food was basically because I worked in food research for that year.
Mm.
Like, it was modeling.
Yeah.
So I think that was the reason why I was asked to do this job, because they were like, hey, you know how to model. And it's food related, but you don't actually need to know anything about food. It's more about like actually building the model. Mm-hmm. You need to have this like more coding and understanding math skills, mm-hmm. not so much the food system skills. Mm-hmm. But that kind of got me into this like whole food sphere and introduced me to my now supervisor of my default.
So there's a little moment that we skipped over in that, which is your moment of coming to Oxford and coming to the UK. So you're German, you grew up in Germany, yes. you grew up in Mainz,
yes,
which is also where you went to university.
Yes.
So how did it feel for you coming here?
It was quite an experience, but I think it was a very different experience for like maybe normal times or compared to normal times, just because it was in the middle of COVID.
You arrived in the middle of COVID.
Exactly. So I was...
That's not normal times.
No. I remember getting here and I was like... So first of all, getting here was a journey, right? I tried to not fly just because of environmental concerns. So the idea of like, how do I get to the UK without... Like the thing is like, when you came from certain countries... you would need to quarantine or not, depending on like where you travel to and stuff like that. So I remember I had to check because my mom, she drove me with her car to Oxford so that I could take some more stuff with me and don't have to fly. But the funny thing was we drove to France and I was like, if France has like too many COVID cases and you have to quarantine when you come from France, even though you don't have to quarantine when you come from Germany, I might still need to quarantine. So it was like until the
good old days.
until the very last minute, I was like really afraid of that. But then I moved into a big house, which was actually Queen's accommodation with 10 other students, most of them DPhil students.
10 students in one house.
Yes.
That's but a to real be, student experience.
To be honest, it was great.
Yeah.
I was so grateful because I feel if I would have not lived in a big house, I would have been lonely.
So lonely. Yeah.
Because everything was locked down. Like there was no chance of going into the department. All my lectures were online. There was no like organized group activities, nothing. I mean, even the college was very cautious about members of our communities which are either having like a greater risk of having a serious COVID case, or also we have some families living on site, so they were also trying to protect those families, right? So the college was very restrictive in who they let in on the ground and what kind of activities can take place. And I was so lucky because my household was so big that we could actually spend a lot of time together. So I think that also brought us quite close, just because, I mean, if you're locked down together and you're hanging out in the kitchen every single evening or go to, we had an enormous garden, which was great. So you go to the garden or you do sports in the morning together. We went on runs together and stuff like that.
So you had a good setup.
Yeah, that was just like, honestly, the best thing that could have happened to me. So I was super happy about that.
And then academically, what was your experience like of settling in here? And how does that experience differ to the experience of your hometown university?
I think also that might be quite...
I guess hindered also by COVID.
Yeah, it was hindered.
Because you don't have the social aspect of the university.
I think that was... So I feel like I had no interaction with my cohort. Like, I had some interaction with my cohort, but very, very little. I knew like 4 or 5 people out of my whole cohort. And we did like sometimes work on exercise sheets together via Zoom, which was more or less working because you can't really see what other people write. No one of us had the setup to actually like stream, I don't know, they're writing on an iPad while they have like a setup where you can actually see them and talk to them and stuff like that. So it was really hard to like work together as you would normally do. I remember just before the exams, when it was already getting a bit better in terms of like COVID restrictions, we would meet in some of the cafes in Oxford City Centre and sit outside on a table, like pouring rain. And we would sit under this like very small umbrella, not trying to not get our like sheets of paper completely soaked, such that you can read nothing anymore. But it was quite sad because after I finished my last exams, and I mean, I think we were also quite conscious before the exams because no one wanted to get COVID right before the exams because mm-hmm. that would have screwed everything. But after the exams, we kind of all met together, and that's when I actually got to know my cohort. And there were such lovely people. And I was like, this is so sad. I could have had such an amazing time with you guys. And I just didn't know you at all, which is so sad.
And now do you feel like you've developed a good social circle in your cohort?
Yeah. Yes, I feel like now it's very different, right? Because with my DPhil cohort, first of all, my department is doing an amazing job for us to get to know each other. So they're very, like, supportive in a sense that we, for example, I have coffee mornings every week, and in those coffee mornings they kind of sponsor us that we have like some snacks and coffee, and then the DPhils just meet and talk and everyone can like express their thoughts and like their current problems and what they're enjoying doing and what their plans are and stuff like that. So it's kind of a support group, which is really nice. And also after I finished my master's and I started doing the research job here, I actually got to know more people from the college. And then I just love the college community. Like, yeah, students are lovely. Staff is lovely. People, like, I feel it's a very welcoming and accepting community as well. So I feel like I can be myself, which is great.
That's very nice. And I know you live off-site as well, right?
Yes,
I do. So it's great that you still feel that sense of community and collegiality, even though you're living elsewhere.
Yeah, that's true. I'm still living with the people that I lived with in my first year.
Really? In the big 10-person house?
Exactly. So not all of them. Not all of them. Some of them finished, right? The master students left. And some were like, I don't know, like, they basically did their own thing quite a lot. But they, like, the core people, one of them unfortunately graduated. What means unfortunately? He graduated. I'm very proud of him. Yeah, exactly. But the rest of us is still around and we're living together still.
Yeah, that's so great. And what's your kind of, what's your routine with Wolfson? Like, how often do you come in? What do you do when you come here? What's your college life like?
Okay, that's actually a good question. I mean, it really depends. I feel like it has gotten even more intense now, but I feel like I'm often getting in the mornings, then I sometimes go to the gym, sometimes not, depends on the day. I work often in the cafe, which is lovely. Drink some nice cappuccino with oat milk and do some work, so you give yourself some treatment during working time. And yeah, I often go to the upper common room as well. I don't actually go to the library that often. And then after that I have like a lot of like other stuff going on, so I'm going to some dancing society stuff, or I'm singing in a choir, but sometimes I play with the music society here. So we did some gigs, or like for example now with the ball, we played at the ball. Or I'm in a lot of meetings actually with the college governance, which is also very interesting to see, to like see how those things that you experience as a student come into play and how they're planned.
Let's talk through that a little bit, because I think that's something that comes up a lot, right? Like, I think people naturally have feelings and opinions about what goes on in their college environment and don't necessarily know that they can get involved and have a say in that.
That's true.
So what was your experience? So you mentioned Freddie told you about the catering rep position, and then you've also got involved in general meeting.
Yes.
So what was your experience of that?
So first of all, I mean, I had my first general meeting yesterday, actually. It was very, very interesting. I'm not sure if I got your question correctly. Do you want to know, like, how I got into that more, or do you want to...
I think, like, how you got into it, but also what sparked your feeling that you wanted to get into it.
I think for me it's always, like, when I see something which I would like to improve, or, like, where I have an idea what you could do, I'm always like, I can't complain without at least trying to change it. That's a good answer. I think that was driving me to do this.
And that's the same attitude that seems to have got you involved in food systems as well.
Yeah, exactly. It's always the same. It's always like, I'm feeling like responsible for doing something. And I mean, knowing Freddie helped a lot, right? Because I knew someone who was already doing this and who knew who to speak to. Mm. And I mean, generally, those positions get advertised through the college. So it's not something where you have to know someone, but it's more like he made me aware of that because we get letters from the college which are telling you, okay, those are the events happening, those are the positions here, we need some student representative here, we need some help here, you can have your say, maybe a survey or something. But often, because you get so many emails, they just get lost somewhere and you don't read them thoughtfully as you should. So I feel like it helped me quite a lot to just see that these opportunities are there. And then I just... yeah, I just applied, basically. So
and what is it that you want to impact or change within the college?
So there are several things which I think I would like to act on. So one of the things is, like, as you mentioned, I'm not living on college side. And I've never lived on college side. And I feel sometimes there's quite a divide between students who live in college and students who don't live in college. So I've, for example, I've got some people in my cohort who are actually Wolfson students, but who never come in. I can never see them. And one of the reasons, because they're never coming in, is because they just don't live in college. And there's, it is an effort for them to come in because it's quite far north. I mean, air quotation marks. It's like,
for listeners,
yeah, exactly. The thing is, like, it's not that far out.
No, but, I mean, Oxford, in the grand scheme of things, you can cycle across it in 15 minutes, right?
I'm cycling in from the other end of the city in 25 minutes in the morning. It's okay, and I'm a very slow cycler, a cyclist. No, but I feel like, you have a reason to come here, or you need a reason to come here. And sometimes it's also, like, just practical things. Like, for example, we are now trying to advertise that there are lockers available for students so that people who don't come in every day have the opportunity to lock some stuff. And if you're, like, for example, playing tennis and you want your racket to be stored in college because you don't want to take your racket home every single time you want to play tennis, it makes some sense to just store it in college and keep it here, or have a spare set of clothes if the rain is starting again and you get soaked on your cycle here, which happens to me quite often. So things like this, that you, like, have a more, I don't know, that, like, the both students' communities, you've got, like, people living inside and people living outside are, like, growing together more, and that there's more exchange between those two worlds. So that's something that I would like to achieve. I think the second thing, what I'm really passionate about, is food. I'm trying to,
so,
like,
you're working quite closely with Michael, who's our head chef.
Exactly. And I would like to improve on sustainability and vegan and vegetarian food. Not so much the taste, I think. We just run a survey, and I mean, I can't talk about the results so too much now because they're not
top secret
officially released yet. But I feel like people in general weren't too too unhappy about the food. So it seems like in general people are quite happy about it. But there are still some things that you could do to, like, improve the take-up on vegan and vegetarian food, especially since the college has a sustainability strategy and they want to be, like, or they want to reach net zero this, like, this year. So I feel like having a, going alongside with a well-thought-through food and catering related strategy would actually be just natural. And I mean, it's hard because you don't want to force anyone to eat vegan or vegetarian. I think it's more like actually increasing the visibility and, like, trying to, like, raise awareness what are the consequences if you eat meat and dairy dairy products. Maybe I should mention that I'm vegan myself, just that there's, like, no confusion about that. But so yeah, we're talking about maybe. So one of the questions, for example, in the survey was, is it okay for students or members of the college in general to have, for example, a meat-free day each week? Just that you have, like, one day a week where you just have more vegetarian, vegan options, but no meat. And maybe that makes you discover your new favorite dish, which is cannelloni with spinach and halloumi cheese, whatever. Like, I don't know if this actually goes well together. But the thing is, like,
I'd eat it.
maybe you would, like, find something else that you like, which does not have meat but is still tasty. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's about that, trying to push for like more sustainability in that respect.
So outside of college life then, and thinking about your current academic career and where you might want to go next, and also in your personal life, what are you dreaming of right now?
What I'm dreaming of in like academic terms, I mean, finishing this D-film. This is a big
when's the big finish date? Year, at least.
I don't know. Like, I mean, you start out by saying 3 years, but then nearly everyone I know is doing 4. Yeah, so I'm not sure least. If I should aim for 4. I don't know.
Yeah.
But at some point in time, I would like to finish it. Not too far ahead. And as for the longer run, I'm actually quite unsure currently. I would like to torn in between two things. I really like academia, but then I'm also like, where can I have the biggest impact? And I might actually like to go somewhere where I can have like more direct policy impact. So I don't know, being in a big organization like the FAO or the UN or the WHO, something like that, where you can actually like work on real life problems and not just the academic side would be nice, or being an academic advisor for something like that would be something that I would be interested in, because I feel like I would like to apply my research in a way that is useful
in a practical way.
That would be nice.
And where is there anywhere specific in the world that you see yourself doing that?
That's a good question, because I'm not a person who's going on fieldwork, which is very sad. I'm doing models, and models are not necessarily needing you to go elsewhere. And there are a lot of people in my cohort who are like going to all different kind of places, from South Africa to Indonesia to Australia, everywhere. I don't know. I think it's more a question of where the opportunity opens up and what the specific circumstances are. Because currently, I wouldn't be, like, I think I would be happy everywhere with, like, I don't know. So I think it really depends on how long I would stay there and what the, like, situation would be in general. Because I think one thing that I realized living abroad is that one thing, the only thing basically for me, which makes me a lot sad, is that you're not seeing your family and friends home that often. And I'm a very, like, I'm a big family person. So I really love my sister. I really love my parents, my grandparents, like my cousins. It's really nice to have them around me. And it's so sad that I see them now much less frequently than I used to. And living abroad, especially if it's overseas in the sense that you're going to the US or to Asia or Africa, that you actually have long distances to travel. The pandemic kind of also showed me that it's sometimes it can really be not just a 6 or 7 hour flight. It can be in like, real border in a sense that you can't transpass it. And I mean, I'm still lucky because I've got a German passport. I can get into most countries in this world rather easily, but I have friends who are from very different countries, and for them, just going to Europe is now a hassle because their visa is telling them you can go to the UK and the UK only. And I feel this is something that you shouldn't just ignore. So I would be open to go everywhere, but I would really need to have a think about it before I go.
No, I agree. I think that's very important. You got to think about where you feel most grounded, I think.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, here's to seeing more family and close friends in the future then.
Yeah. Let's see. Maybe I can convince them to come here.
Yeah, I think so. Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Yeah.
It's great to have you.
I hope I didn't talk too much.